Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's been an interesting few days for sports fans. The National Labor Relations Board ruled that football players at Northwestern University are employees of the school and can form a union and bargain collectively. But wait, they're not allowed to be paid. Bargain for what? And the New York Jets signed that controversial quarterback, Michael Vick, he of the dogfighting conviction. Here with me now to take your calls and talk about Vick and college athletes as employees is ESPN reporter Jane McManus. Hi, Jane. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
And listeners, we'll get you right on the phones on this. Jets fans, call in to talk through what you think about your team's newest QB, 212-433-9692, whether you are of the school that says he served his time for charges related to dogfighting and has shown signs of genuine rehabilitation and you're ready to welcome him to gangrene, or whether you're just disgusted and you won't even turn it on this fall. 212-433-WNYC. Or if you want to talk about the NLRB ruling about college athletes, give us a call on that. Are you in favor of college athletes being treated and compensated as employees, especially those who play for big-time college basketball and football teams that generate millions of dollars for the schools? Will you watch March Madness this weekend with a different eye because of this ruling? 212-433-WNYC. Jane, Michael Vick first. He has worked with the Humane Society. He's donated money since he got out of prison. He's been described repeatedly as a model NFL citizen, a real mentor to the young quarterback on the Eagles last year. Should fans believe that Michael Vick has changed and give him a chance?
Well, I think that the upshot of that is that no one can ever really know. He actually called the Humane Society, and he hasn't done any active work with them since 2012 in April when he went to Capitol Hill to lobby for a bill that would make a felony for an adult to bring a child to a dogfight. That ended up passing. But he hasn't done any active work with them since, although he's done a lot of stuff on his own. I think part of the situation with the Humane Society is, you know, their core constituency probably is not going to forgive Vick very easily. So they have to do a lot of explaining whenever they do appearances with him or group efforts in conjunction with him. Part of his affiliation with Humane Society was when the Eagles made a $50,000 donation to spread awareness about dogfighting and trying to prevent it. And then Vick was kind of installed as the person who would talk about that. So I'm not saying it's not genuine, but I am saying that there are certainly things that you could point to, and it's a tricky situation for him.
And this was a whole systematic operation of forcing dogs to fight, killing the ones that didn't win in really gruesome ways, whether or not children were in the audience. So it's hard to blame people who are totally disgusted and can't abide by him. On the other hand, he has distanced himself from the whole thing. But to what degree? Is it clear to you? Has he denounced the entire arena of dogfighting as inherently cruel and inhumane?
Well, I think that he has publicly, and he's tried very hard to take that message back to schools, back to children, back to the communities that he's come from. So I think he has definitely done that. I mean, the ASPCA, however, came out and said that, you know, much what you did, that you can't really forget what he did because it was so cruel. But I spoke to Dante Stallworth, who is a former NFL player who pled guilty to DUI manslaughter, about this. And he said, you know, that he looks at Vick and he sees him as somebody who's trying to come back and do something different and spread awareness. And you know, he deals with people, too, who will never be able to forgive him for what happened. And he said, but what would you rather have Vick do? Would you prefer that he didn't do anything, that he just collected a paycheck and went home? I mean, at least this way, Vick really is trying to do some kind of good. But I think Vick doesn't talk about it as much because there are just some people who will never be able to get past it. So at some point it comes to, you know, he can't really debate it with people. You know, it's, you either have a feeling about it or you don't.
And it just becomes ultimately a perception thing. I think most people would agree that individuals who've committed a crime, served their time, should not be prohibited from pursuing their livelihoods. In this case, that happens to be being an NFL quarterback. But there's risk in it for the Jets. There's perception risk. There's, you know, fan desertion risk if enough people feel strongly enough against Michael Vick.
Well, I think that every fan base, I mean, this comes up again, and some people are like, why are we bringing this up again? I think it comes up again because every fan base then has to wrestle with, do we cheer for Vick? How do we feel about cheering for Vick? And, you know, dogs are an emotional issue. It's not just a rational thing. So a lot of people come to this, and they have to think about it anew. Like, what can I do? I talked to a Jets fan who was very concerned about it. She's like, I just don't know how I'm going to cheer for him if, you know, if he runs for 5 yards. But at the same time, you know, I've talked to some criminal justice professors about this, Ann Jacobs at the John Jay School of Criminal Justice, and she said, you know, we as a society, we're really good with penalizing people, but we're not really good with getting beyond that and figuring out what happens after they've gone to prison, after they've served time. You know, there are all sorts of adjacent penalties that come along for people who have served their time. And when do you say someone is rehabilitated? You know, you can't look into his heart and say he's, you know, he's a changed person. But how do we as a society kind of look at this and say, you know, someone's done something and we have to try to reintegrate them? It's a much bigger issue than just Vic.
So, Jane, this may not surprise you, but we have 10 lines. We put out the call for people to chime in on either of these two stories, college athletes unionizing or Michael Vick pro-con. 9 of the 10 lines are people who want to talk about Vick.
And not surprised.
All 9 are against him. So let's take Jan in Brooklyn as a representative. Jan, you speak for your caller community. You're on WNYC.
Ah, thank you. I told your screener that in my heart of hearts, I think Vick is a sociopath, and he knows how to counterfeit emotion, but I don't think he feels it. That's just an opinion. There are professional articles, pro and con, about whether sociopaths, psychopaths, and we're not talking Ted Bundy. You work with people who are minor league sociopaths or psychopaths, can or cannot be rehabilitated. They don't understand what people are feeling, but they can counterfeit it. What would I like to see Vick do? I'd like him to take a few years off and work constantly with pit bulls that have been rescued. Not just, and I'm a little disappointed with the Humane Society. I contribute to them regularly, and I think they do good work, but I think they got in bed with Vick on this one. I really do.
Jan, thank you very much. Maybe they saw more upside than downside for their cause eventually in the long run, and, you know, I think it goes to your point, Jane, Jan's comment, that we can't really know what's inside a guy's head and heart. So Jan sees him as a sociopath who's feigning rehabilitation. There's no way to prove it one way or the other. Michael in Centerport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I would like to call in. The Jets also recruited for the next season Eric Decker, who's being touted as the number one receiver from the Broncos, and he is a great player. He actually has a foundation called Decker's Dogs, which takes dogs and gives them to servicemen as service animals, literally a person's best friend. And he's going to be the number one receiver. At the same time, you have a quarterback who has abused dogs, and this might be an interesting quarterback-receiver paradigm on the team.
That is true. I did some looking into that, and it's a, you know, it looks like a really interesting foundation, certainly, and is, you know, irony. But, you know, a lot of times when these guys get in the locker room, it is you've got, you know, teammates in there, and a lot of them have done things you may not agree with. You know, Ray Rice, for example, has now been indicted for a third-degree assault against his wife for something that happened in Atlantic City. And so you may have teammates you have to get along with who come from different places and completely different circumstances, and you still have to play together on the field. I don't know that I necessarily think it would be a huge deal in that locker room once they get in there.
The closest thing, and Michael, thank you for your call, that we have to a positive comment about Dick comes on our webpage. Pablo Alto from Brooklyn writes how he hates what Vick did, but then, quote, it is my hope that Mr. Vick does well as a Jet and continues to forge a life that has a positive impact. The alternative is to wish him ill, and I am not sure that does anything good for anyone. And I have, Jane, I mean, just my casual impression, you know, I'm not doing a scientific survey of sports media, but my casual impression is that many sports writers and commentators are saying, get over it. He served his time. What do you want him to do? Never play again. He's got to have some kind of a job. Do you get the sense that that's the consensus among your colleagues, more or less?
I sure do. I think that is a big consensus, that this is a story that's been told and it's time to move on. And again, I feel like that is different because, you know, every fan base has to wrestle with this issue on their own. It really is. It kind of puts you on the spot as a fan. Who am I going to cheer for? And I think there are a lot of fans that would cheer for just about anybody in the right jersey if they're able to get, you know, 5 yards consistently on a goal line stand. I mean, I think that there is that segment of the population, and I don't necessarily think that they're going to be calling into your show, but they're out there. But I think that there is a level of fatigue with this story, just like, you know, you find in a lot of times in sports, and especially among fans, there's fatigue with a Ray Rice story, domestic violence, you know, any kind of off-the-field issue. People don't want to talk about it. They just want to talk about the football.
And also, there may be plenty of people listening right now who are like, okay, give Vic a chance. Let him play. This is over. And you know, whatever else goes with that. But we know that in talk radio, the people with the strongest passions are the ones who tend to call in.
Yeah.
So those would probably tend to be the anti right now. But I am curious to see if it gets reflected in Jets ticket sales or not. I would suspect not, because the people who buy Jets tickets may not be so ambivalent and focused on this issue. But we will find out in the fall. All right. 5 minutes left. Reset. The other story, National Labor Relations Board ruling that football players at Northwestern University are employees of the school and can form a union and bargain collectively in what is supposed to be amateur sports. You know, college athletes can't get paid. Ed in Jamaica, Queens is going to get our first comment on this. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing, Brian?
All right.
Basically, a lot of people don't realize the history of collegiate sports. And especially football. I used to play semi-pro, and I had an interest in it. And I looked it up, and basically, collegiate football started with paid players. The college experience in America in the early 1800s, a student was too valuable to waste time playing sports outside of the Olympic arena, like running, javelin, rowing, things of that nature. And local workers formed teams, and they played this hybrid game of rugby / soccer, which later evolved into football. And since the colleges, some of the colleges had large fields, they would charge the men to use the field. And when they saw how many people were coming to watch the men play, they started to charge a fee. But the initial collegiate athletes weren't collegiate, and they were paid employees of the school.
There you go. Ed, thank you for that history.
So days before the NCAA, for sure.
I guess. So Jane McManus from ESPN, this ruling says that the players have the right to form a union and collectively bargain. So what are the real implications?
Well, I think it's a little too soon for those to be known. There's just so much that could happen here. There are a million steps between here and, you know, slicing off college football and men's basketball and turning them into adjacent semi-professional teams affiliated with the university. I mean, if that's even the end. I think that it's too soon to know what's going to happen, but I think what it does is it's a crack in the wall. And, you know, the NCAA got, you know, $11 billion from CBS in 2010 for the men's basketball tournament. And that money is going somewhere, but not at all to the players. I mean, some people say that you're getting tuition and that's compensation, but it's not compensation in a currency that can be spent anywhere else other than on your tuition. So
the current rules are that they cannot be paid other than through scholarships, which is the form of compensation that they can get, then what could they be collectively bargaining for if they're allowed to form a union? Just more money in their scholarship?
Well, I would imagine also conditions. I mean, a lot of what they're looking at is to be treated better as players, especially when it comes to medical care and scholarships. I mean, as it stands, you know, players get scholarships on a year-to-year basis. So it's a very unsure system for players, right? All of the power is in the hands of, you know, if you're going to look at it from the NLRB's perspective, management, right, which is the coaches. So the coaches have all the power in this relationship. It's funny because, you know, one of the columns that was written by Juliet McCour in the New York Times today talks about, you know, a player's reaction, and he has a somewhat reaction, a positive reaction to the outcome, the players prevailing and being able to unionize. But then he says, I don't want to say too much about it. And I think that's really interesting, because what other academic institution and what other academic setting is a student afraid afraid to speak out and discuss an idea. And that seems to be contrary to the whole idea of academics to begin with.
So they're asking for the right to earn endorsement deals. That would really break the current system. Workers' comp if they're injured. The right to keep scholarships if they're injured. That one is so interesting to me. We just have 10 seconds left. But if you get a scholarship, it's only good a year at a time. And if you get injured and if you're of no financial use to the employer, to the university anymore, you can't continue if you're a low-income student on your scholarship.
This is certainly one of the tenets of the current system that seems really unfair.
And I will throw in that now that we had that other stretch of conversation and I mentioned who called in about Vic, the pro-Vic callers are now calling in because we got their hackles up, just being fair to that side. ESPN reporter Jane McManus, great job. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.